Okay. Now we're going to move on to the qualities of the giving that make the deed most powerful karmically. So there's three factors of this one. Number one is do it out of respect. And have an attitude of respect in body language, presentation, manner, etc. And we have to apply this one to our culture. So we nicely hand a homeless person money instead of throwing it or, you know, thrusting it at them, something like that. So it's in our manner, how we do the deed. And then the second one is to give what is really needed at the time that it's needed most. It's not giving when we feel like it necessarily, or giving away things that we don't want or need. So we try to judge the other person's need. And then we know when they really need us, then we're there. Or like when, I think we might get to this later, but when somebody is short on money, that's when we give them money. And it's also, I think we get into this later, but giving money to someone who really needs it is more powerful than giving to someone who doesn't. And a lot of times it's a lot easier in some way to give money to someone who doesn't really need it, as opposed to, I don't know. I see that in myself in a way that, like, I'd rather buy dinner for a friend or something like that than take the time to give money to a homeless person when they ask at a stoplight. That sort of thing. Because in a way, it's more convenient for me. At the stoplight, what if the light changes and then other people are mad and honking and, you know, which probably wouldn't even happen. It's most likely, I mean, it could, but it's most likely just these obstacles I'm putting up. But it's mostly about me. So giving what's really needed at the time when it's needed most. And then number three is what you give can't cause harm or be used for harm for the recipient. The example in the Abhidharma is presenting a goat to a butcher. Giving someone poison who wants to commit suicide. Giving someone anything which is going to harm their health, even if they want it. And Geshe Michael says that this line is very clear. A Buddhist isn't allowed to give intoxicants to anybody. And then obviously not stealing anything to give to someone else. And we can't get something for someone with any immoral conduct, using flattery or trickery to get something to give to someone else. So the giving them anything which is going to harm their health, even if they want it, that one's a little tricky because there is the teaching too. This might be talking more about like giving them alcohol that's really harming their health in a big way. But there's also another teaching of giving what you know someone's going to really enjoy, even if you don't think it's good for them. As in, I don't think that my friend needs more desserts, but I know that she loves them, and so I give her one anyways. there's also that sort of thing. So it does come back to intention. But it's not as though her doctors told her that she eats sugar, she's going to die, and I give her sugar. That sort of thing. It's more, or, you know, like, I don't think caffeine, I don't like caffeine. It doesn't feel good in my body. So then in some way, I judge that it's not good for other people too. Although everyone's body's different. So if someone that I know really loves coffee, I get them coffee. It's not like I think this is harmful for my body, therefore I will not give it to you. Not that sort of thing. So there's both sides with this one. Okay, and the next slide. Now talking about the object of giving to have the most powerful result. So the first one is drowa. The second is duknel. The third is pempa. And the fourth is yonten. Okay. So drowa is type of being. The question here is it better to give to a human or to an animal? And it's better to give to humans. Because to give to the worst human, the worst criminal, or rather than the best animal, because humans have the potential to reach nirvana or enlightenment in this life, and animals don't. If the person is a good person and has a good chance to get into the Dharma or is already studying, even better. This is what we were talking about before. The second is giving to someone who's suffering is much more powerful than giving to someone who is not in great need. And this, in some way, these are stating the obvious, but they're things that we don't always think about. And it's good to see them written down. Because I think we can feel this when we give to someone who really needs it, as opposed to someone who could care less if we give it to them or not. Like, they already have so many things that they don't need another one. Not that we don't give to them too, but giving to someone who's hungry or cold or sick. That sort of thing. The third is giving to a special object, such as someone like our parents who have helped us. And this is because they've given us a human body that can reach enlightenment. And a lot of people say, you know, my parents weren't that good, they weren't very nice to me, they didn't take care of me. And in Buddhism, that's not the point. They gave you a body. And that's the reason they're so powerful. They've given you the opportunity to reach total enlightenment or Buddhahood. So we have to be very careful towards them. If we give them something, it's very powerful. And then the fourth, yonten, is giving to those of high spiritual qualities, such as those coming out of high meditation for the first time. This is giving to honor the person. What is giving is of no value to the person, but honors them. Because holy beings don't need flowers, money, food, etc. And the classic example in Abhidharma is a person who just came out of seeing emptiness is a very powerful being to give with. There's this famous story. There was a famous lama. And he was a hermit, and he died. And when they went to his house, he lived by this cliff. They found all these clothes and jewels and all these offerings at the bottom of the cliff where he lived. So he took all these offerings, and he didn't care about them. He just, you know, threw them to the bottom of the cliff. He just took them because he knew that it was powerful for the person giving, to be giving to him. So if we meet someone like the Dalai Lama and we give him a flower, that's much more powerful than giving it to someone else. Okay. And then, say Jela Sakpo.
Jela Sakpo.
Jela Sakpo.
Jela Sakpo.
So that means karma is committed and collected. So, according to Abhidharma, it can also be committed and not collected. So what it means is that this karma is going to stay with you and be stored more firmly planted in your mental stream. Or in the mental seed. So these are the six things that cause karma to be committed and collected. The collected means that a bhakchak is planted in your mental stream. So the first one is intentional. You mean to do it. Mostly, what it seems to me a lot of these come down to is paying attention. I meant to do this act of giving. I consciously planned it out. I was aware of what was happening, which we can't be aware of these things. Ami was talking about this last night, unless we're meditating. If we're not meditating, we just don't have the space to see, space to be aware of what we're doing, of what's happening. So the first one is we mean to do it. The second one is it's a complete path of karma, so it has all four parts present. The object, intention, it's undertaken, and it's completed. The third one is we have no regrets. We're glad that we did it. In the case of giving, to be happy about what we did makes it much more powerful. And on the flip side, to give and then be unhappy about it really harms that karmic seed. So that's a good one to keep in mind, to not overextend past where we are comfortable. There's a way where we push and try to grow, and there will be times when we're past where we're comfortable, but not to like give our house away when we first meet someone and then we're homeless and we're like, oh my God, what did I do? And it's also a reason why if we're able to get to that point where we do some big giving, it's good to dedicate it right away so that that seed is sealed and sent on its way, and not damaged if in the next moment we regret it. And number four is there's no antidote. We didn't do anything to make up for it. So the most powerful antidote is to think of karma and the emptiness of the deed. We'll talk about the four forces or four powers a little bit too. So in the concept of the four forces, where we try to purify the bhakchak, the antidote is very important in purifying it. And then number five is glad that you did it. You have some enjoyment in having done it. It's kind of like a mental wrap-up. For the example of killing, the guy is there on the floor. He has a knife sticking out of him, and we're happy we did it. And then number six is more of like a result of the previous five. There's a lot of lists like this in Buddhism. The sixth one is like, it doesn't seem like it's part of the list, but it's kind of the wrap-up in a way. So the sixth is definite karmic result. A karmic seed is definitely planted. It's now cemented in our mind, and we will experience some result. So by keeping these qualities in mind when we do a karmic deed, which just by going over them, some of them will sink in, and then if you meditate on them, even for a short time, or view the notes, it'll stay deeper and deeper. It doesn't really, in my experience, it doesn't take that much extra studying for things to sink in more deeply. It's just that mostly, most of us are just too lazy to do it, usually. And it, for us, for, you know, the shape of our minds, our intellect, it doesn't take that much extra effort for it to really stay and sink in. So it's a good thing, because once we start to do just that little extra, which you may already be doing, the information just stays so much better. And it's from a small amount of effort. So it's really cool. Okay, and then the last one, we'll end with a meditation after this, is the four powers. Were you here when we talked about this before?
Yes.
Okay. Have you practiced it at all?
Some.
Okay. How's it going?
It's kind of, actually right now it's kind of like when I remember, it's still kind of getting used mm-hmm. to having that practice and mm-hmm. utilizing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I do this, you know, seeking refuge and feel lots of times I'll forget about the rejoicing part.
Oh, yeah.
It's like after a while and I'm like, oh, that's right, I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I'll do some of the steps and then I'll realize that, oops, I missed one, or
yeah,
I didn't think about that. Or
yeah. And that's okay. That's just the process of getting something to be a habit.
And then sometimes it's hard to figure out the restitution, what, you know, what is really inappropriate, depending upon what it is.
Mm-hmm. So, for the makeup activity, which is
right.
the restitution, what it's saying here, and we'll go over in the next course too, is a meditation on emptiness. Is a really powerful one. And you can say mantras for the makeup activity. So even like Om Mani Padme Om, that sort of thing. You could just do a meditation on what happened, like the karmically, what happened here. What seeds were coming up? What seeds did I plant? What else do I usually do? I think a good makeup activity is visualizing it happening differently.
Rewriting the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have noticed, like when you were saying with the restraint part, the difference in how it feels of saying, okay, I'm not going to do this for a week versus I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that.
Oh, good.
Powerful,
there is a big difference in feeling in that. Yeah, so the four powers. The first one, refuge. Mostly how I think of this is, I know I just planted a seed that I'm not going to want to see come up. I just did this, and then that leads directly into two. And I really wish I hadn't. I just wish I hadn't done that. I'm causing pain for myself in the present, probably for someone else, and pain for the future. And I'm never going to do that again. Instead, I'm going to say these 20 mantras, or think about the karma of what happened. Emptiness. How do these things really exist? And then, awesome, I'm done. I purified that one. It's totally gone. It's completely cleansed. Not there anymore. I'm done. And sometimes that's kind of the acting part. It might not feel like it's completely done.
Yeah, I think that's the part that I have a little bit of trouble with. It's like,
yeah.
How can I really be sure that?
Yeah, and I think there's different parts of it. One part is just getting used to doing the practice then brings about more certainty that it's cleansed. And then also some things need to be cleansed over and over, and then we'll feel for sure. I don't think I used to feel for sure that something was done. And now I find it does happen sometimes. It doesn't happen all the time, but I can see how it does now. And it didn't used to before, just from doing it over and over. Yeah. So we'll end with a meditation. Do you have any other questions on anything? It can be anything from the course.
It's not necessarily a question, but what I found interesting now having taken this course, because I did kind of have that, you know, as I described to my husband, kind of the Western philosophy of, you know, perception of what karma is. And so,
which is like a punishment, really,
or like the immediate. So even on, I think it was Facebook yesterday, I saw something where it was this little thing about, and it was like hashtag, you know, karma, when, you know, karma is a bitch or something like that.
Yeah.
Where it's apparently this guy had like cut this person, you know, there were two gentlemen were driving, and this one guy cut the other guy off to take a parking space, flipped him off, and did all this stuff. And then when they get into the building, the guy that did all the nasty stuff was the person, the interviewee, and
oh,
the guy
God.
That he did it to was the interviewer, the boss.
Oh my
gosh. And
it gosh.
Was kind of like, after he did that, I'm sitting there on the other side of the table as he walks in, and it was like, hashtag karma, you know, what goes around comes around, karma's a bitch. But it was just seeing that, and in the past it would have been like, oh yeah, you know, you got what was coming to you, and now it's like, no, wait a second. Now, yes, if he does that kind of action normally in his life, he's probably planted the seed before that has now ripened and that put him in that situation. But realizing now it's not just that immediate, oh, I flipped
right.
you off, now I'm here.
Right.
So I think that's kind of, it's really helped me to see it in the true perspective instead
yep.
of the way it's described in the world.
Yeah, because it's
our,
mostly
our
used
world.
As like a punishment.
Yeah. Or,
as like revenge
yeah.
type idea,
or almost you better be a good person because
right.
it's going to come back at you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, which I mean, what about the karmic seed that people are planting by saying that? That's never mentioned. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how it's made it into such mainstream society, but in a way that's wrong a lot of times, not all the time. You know, like
yeah.
there is some basic part of it that is true there, but
I'm finding that with several of the concepts in Buddhism that
yeah.
know, had kind of been adopted into, you know, our culture and our society. We talk about it, but without really that true understanding of what's the deeper meaning.
Right, it's an example of just kind of co-opting some idea and making it fit beliefs that we already have. Like, yeah, people do get punished for what they do, and that's called karma now. You know, like, I already thought that, and I knew that, and now I'm going to use this new word that I know to name it. That sort of thing.
Now I can judge you because you're doing bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely see things in a very different way than I did before.
Cool.
So that shift. I can't think of any questions in particular. So.
Sounds good. We're going to end with a meditation on the four powers. We might end a little early, but we'll see how long the meditation goes. Take a few moments. And let go of the tension in the body again. You may find it easily falls away this time. It doesn't take as much effort as it did in the beginning of class. Let all the tension from your face go. The forehead, the eyes, jaw. Find your breath for a few moments. Feeling the physical movement of breath wherever you feel it most. And now think of something in your life that you'd like to purify, something that's causing difficulty or stress. Think of something that you can manage thinking about that's not too overwhelming. And then take this thing as the meditation object, turning it around in front of your mind and thinking, what would be the karmic cause of this? Maybe the answer comes really quickly. Maybe you turn over the object over and over and open up the space for the answer to come. So on our own, a few minutes of analytical meditation, which is what this is, looking at this object, this difficulty that comes up for me, and what would be the karmic cause? How does this situation make me feel? Are there ways I've made people feel that way in the past? Is there just some sense of the cause that maybe doesn't make intellectual sense, but I know within my body makes sense? Maybe it's not so much what's happening, but what the result is. How have I created that or done that to someone in the past? Maybe it's even to myself. So a few minutes turning over this object over and over. And once we get to the answer, staying with the answer, holding that. maybe after coming to some type of conclusion, it might not always be clear. And so if we don't come to some feeling of what it is, that yes, that is it for sure, intellectually we can think, what would be the cause of this? So either way we go about it, thinking of the cause that we came up with, and going for refuge, the first step. I understand karma. I know how it works. And I really wish that I hadn't planted that seed. So we're kind of combining the first and the second, refuge and regret. I understand how this works. I harm someone else, harm comes to me. And I just wish I hadn't done that. It's a bummer I did that. Not a heavy sense of beating ourselves up, but a healthy intellectual, maybe not intellectual, maybe felt sense. Dang, I just did that, and I wish I hadn't. Even if you don't remember, if I'm seeing the result, I must have done this in the past. I wish I'd never done that. Even if it's a general sense that I've done it my whole life instead of a specific instance, I wish I had never done that. If it feels right, I will never do that again. Never. I'm done doing that. I am no longer a person that does that sort of thing. Up activity. I'm going to say 20 Om Mani Padme Oms. So we can say them in our own time softly to ourselves. Usually we'd have a mala, but we don't, so just keeping track yourself. Keeping the mind on the mantra as you say it to yourself. That last Om Mani Padme Hum, getting a sense that you're completely cleaned, cleansed, done with that deed. And rejoicing. Awesome, I just purified that negativity. I am completely done. Totally done. Even if we don't think we are and we're going to need to go back and purify again, for this moment we're acting as though we are. I'm done. I feel the lightness of being purified and cleansed. There's a coolness. Awesome. And so for a few minutes sitting with that feeling of totally done, cleansed of this whatever negativity, it's completely gone. And it's like the whole body is smiling. And come back to the breath. Release the breath, expand into the room around you. Staying with this feeling of being clean, free of some heaviness, and a mindset where everything is okay. There's nothing wrong. For the last class of the course, we don't do prayers or prostrations, so that we leave some business unfinished so that we come back together. So just mentally offering all the merit of all these hours of courses, studying the mental energy, the physical energy, to reaching full Buddhahood in this lifetime so that we can truly help all other beings do the same. Not wasting our dedication on anything less than that. You can start to move and open your eyes.